Farm in the Countryside is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, weather or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. Ethanol has been a major factor in farm markets for many years now, but how will the new administration and global demand impact production and, in turn, commodity prices? We take a look at what farmers and consumers can expect this year and in the future as the nation focuses on meeting environmental goals. It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, and it's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. If 2020 taught us one thing, it's the value of being prepared for the unexpected. As fascinating and beautiful as our planet is, it can also be unpredictable. But thanks to Pivot BioProven, thousands of farmers across the country had one less thing to worry about this year, their crops' nitrogen needs. Pivot BioProven microbes adhere to the root of the corn plant, creating a mutually beneficial nitrogen-generating partnership that stays strong all the way through harvest. Pivot BioProven is the weather-resistant and sustainable way to achieve more predictable, more productive yields than ever before. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Ethanol production is a major driver in corn markets in the country and has become a major export market as well. When COVID-19 caused a slowdown in the amount of cars and trucks on the road, there was less demand for fuels, which in turn meant less corn being used for ethanol and less of the byproducts made from the refining process. There are still some ethanol plants that have not come back online, yet demand is increasing as the world recovers from the pandemic. And then there's the role ethanol can play in meeting environmental goals for the U.S. and many other nations worldwide. What happens to ethanol has a major impact on crop and livestock farmers and will also impact the consumer, who simply needs to put fuel in their car and food on their table. How does it all play out? Emily Score is CEO of Growth Energy, and we discuss these questions and what we can expect in 2021 and beyond. Emily Score, CEO of Growth Energy, joins me. Emily, I appreciate the time to visit with you. I know that some of our listeners may hear you on AgriTalk and in other outlets out there, but why don't you begin by telling folks that don't know, who is Growth Energy? Because that's pretty important. We hear from Growth Energy, but who is Growth Energy?
Well, thank you for having me, and thanks for the opportunity to talk a little bit about Growth Energy. We are the nation's largest ethanol trade group. So we represent the producers and the supporters of ethanol. Within our membership, we have about 89 biorefineries throughout the country, as well as over 90 companies that do business throughout the value supply chain.
So ethanol has been around for quite a while. In fact, I'll show my age, but in 1991, I gave an FFA speech that actually won, and it was on ethanol, the farmer's link to solving the energy crisis. So, you know, back in 1991.
I love knowing that. Thank you.
So we've had biofuels, ethanol around for a long time, but give me an update where we stand, because sometimes I think that we as farmers, you know, we know that a certain amount of the crop that we produce is going into ethanol, but where do we stand right now? Because with coming off of a year of COVID, and we're still dealing with that, in which we saw less transportation, certainly at the beginning of this pandemic, what happened to ethanol demand and where do we stand as we look back at 2020 and going into 2021?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, no doubt 2020 was a tough year. And I will say the ethanol industry as a whole, we faced some really tough margins and we had some really tough times before COVID. And a lot of that had to do with hostile regulators and trade wars. So we had headwinds coming into COVID. Then we have a global pandemic. In the spring of last year, as the world suddenly went to a standstill, fuel demand dropped 50%, which means ethanol demand dropped 50%. So at one point around April was really the low point for us as an industry. Half of the industry was offline. I still do have members who have not yet opened their doors since they closed them last spring. So that was kind of the worst moment for us as an industry. We have recovered primarily as the country has returned to some new sense of normalcy. Right now, you know, we've been hovering for the past several months around 10% below demand. That's for gasoline and for ethanol. So for 2020, for the year, we produced 12.7% less ethanol than we did in 2019. It's 1.99 billion gallons of ethanol we didn't produce. What does that mean for farmers? That's 689 million bushels of corn that we didn't grind. So that does have a direct impact when you think that we are a market for about 40% of the corn grown in this country. Now, let's look ahead and see, can we be a little bit more optimistic? Yes, we can. I mean, we are on the road to recovery. The most current projections have us only about 5% off for the year of 2021, and then getting closer back to 2019 levels next year. So that's where we are, kind of at a macro picture. I will say our exports actually, they suffered last year, but not as much as our domestic demand, in part because we had an increase in demand for industrial ethanol. So we are about 9% off in terms of our exports. Having said that, looking forward, I mean, there is a growing global appetite for our product. Because we produce it so well, we do face protective tariffs in countries like Brazil. But as nations around the world are looking at their climate priorities, reducing carbon, cleaning the air, having affordable fuel for their consumers, ethanol is increasingly going to be something that they're going to be turning to for their fuel.
I wanted to go to exports because I know that, you know, when you look at the top three exports, the countries that we exported to last year, kind of interesting. Canada, number one. You mentioned Brazil, who's number two, I believe. But is India number three? I would really enjoy hearing you talk for a moment about Canada and India and why those countries have become such an important place for us to export ethanol.
Yes, Canada has become our top trading partner, and it's largely due to the fact that they have very forward-leaning goals with respect to climate. In their clean fuel standard, they just announced that they have a goal of being E15 by 2030. And so they're really one of the leaders globally in terms of how they're embracing biofuels to address their climate needs. And so they were our top export market last year and continue to be. India is interesting. The market there is for industrial use. So they are not importing ethanol, our product, for use as a fuel. They're using it for industrial grade. We certainly have some work to do in the country. We certainly want to be able to export it as a fuel. But that's a market for us right now because of industrial uses.
I know that you had a press release here not too long ago talking about ethanol and the emissions compared to gasoline. And you may want to talk about that for a moment and what that means here. But I'm also interested because you mentioned Canada needs to lower their emissions. Are we going to continue to see that with other countries saying, okay, we need to meet these goals too. This is not just the U.S. and therefore we need to be importing ethanol from the United States. Is that where we're headed with a lot of these countries needing to meet these goals, do you think?
Absolutely. That's where we are headed globally. And I hope that's where we're headed domestically as well. So Canada is a great example because that is driven by climate standards. So that's a conversation that you're going to be seeing more and more, especially in kind of developing markets as well. Domestically, I mean, you look at the transition in Washington, D.C., with the Biden administration in and just these very strong expressions around climate and the commitment around climate. And for us, that excites me because biofuels are a solution. We know that for the Biden administration to meet its very lofty goals, they need biofuels. We are readily available and we are affordable for all communities. You mentioned some exciting science. Yes, in late January, the latest research that came out showed that ethanol has a 46% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions relative to gasoline. And so what a wonderful way to begin with the Biden administration for us. That's been a great opportunity to showcase that our ability to make a difference in the environment continues to improve over time. Much of that, I will say, is because of the improvements in the sustainability efforts that farmers are making in the field. And much of our ability to continue to improve our carbon score is going to be as we recognize the innovations taking place at the farm. So the farmers are very much our partner in this narrative.
I don't know how much you get into this side of it, but certainly ethanol can help reduce emissions. And so as we think about being more green and meeting standards, what does that mean, do you think, for farmers growing the corn out there then? Do you see, as you mentioned, sustainable practices and so forth, is there going to be a big push then for farmers to perhaps do things differently, incentives out there? What do you see on that end as we continue to try to make this move towards meeting some of these standards and goals?
I think there absolutely is, and I think we're really still at the formative stages of those conversations. So the principles, it's very important, kind of the principles that we're applying as we're starting to be creative and have this ideation process, whether it's at the state level or at the federal level. Very important, and the message that we, Growth Energy, are delivering to policymakers and to our champions is, as you are looking at climate solutions and climate goals, you need to embrace agriculture as a solution. We are part of the solution. Bring us in as a partner, and we'll be able to achieve some great things together. So I think that the devil is very much going to be in the details in terms of how do we account for carbon? How do you incentivize continued innovations and sustainable practices at the farm level? Because there's got to be a way. Of course, we've got to make sure that this is worth it. That this is worth it socially, but importantly financially as well for the individual farmer. So there's a lot of conversations taking places among various stakeholder groups, among various policymakers, and the priority for us is to make sure that we have a seat at the table for all of those conversations, that ethanol and agriculture are embraced as part of the solution. And as you look at all of this buzz and all of this intention around electric vehicles, there is no one silver bullet solution to what do we do about climate. So you've got to use every tool in the toolbox. Biofuels like ethanol are a very important tool. And so that's kind of the tone and the tenor of the conversation from our perspective with a leadership, certainly in Washington and in the states right now.
Help us understand the energy mix, perhaps. You mentioned electric vehicles there, and I think sometimes when we see people bantering around, perhaps on Facebook or different things, they say, well, you know, if we go all electric, this will happen and so forth. Are we really moving toward something that is all of one thing, or are we going to be in a place in which we are doing some of several things here? Help me understand the transition you see and where ethanol fits into this transition that we are continuing to make when it comes to some of these standards in the environment.
Yeah, I think we're going to see there are many different things that we're going to have to do. It's not going to be all of one thing. It's going to be some of a lot of different things, as you say. If your goal is zero emission future by 2050, you're not going to get there just by electrical vehicles. EVs is going to be one tool. So too is a tool that you need to embrace with biofuels. And so as you look at the most aggressive forecasts out there, I know we're seeing very big proclamations right now as automakers are making statements about what their future fleet is going to look like. But if you look at the reality of the cars on the road today and what cars will be on the road in the next 10 years, in the next 20, and in the next 30 years, the internal combustion engine, which uses liquid fuels, that's going to be the dominant car on the road for decades to come. And because of that, all the more reason, well, let's make that fuel that the car is using as clean as possible. Ethanol, you can use ethanol today. And so that's really got to be the focus of the conversation. And we have some education that we need to do with policymakers to make sure that they understand there is a solution right before you that's available today. It can be used in a blend like E15, for example. E15 can be used in 95% of the cars on the road today. And it's affordable. Your typical gallon of E15 is about a 5 or 10 cent discount relative to your standard 87 octane E10 blend. So it's a way for every consumer to drive with a fuel that's cleaner for the air, it's better for the engine, and it's better for their pocketbook as well.
So do you see, you mentioned going from E10 to E15, is that where we continue to make up ground? The automakers continue to have engines then that are going to be able to burn more ethanol? Is that one of our easiest routes? Is that where we're headed down the road?
E15 is the most immediate route, and then it's going to be a stepping stone, we believe and we hope, to a mid-level blend like an E25 or an E30. And that's going to be the sweet spot where an automaker really is going to be able to benefit the most from the clean high octane that you get from using ethanol. But if you look at kind of the marketplace today and the quick transition that we can make, E15 is available at about 2,300 retail locations today. And we continue to spend a lot of time talking with retailers. They really like offering this fuel because it's high value, and they see when their consumers have the ability to use it, they come back for it because it's good for the engine and it's good for the pocketbook at the same time. So, you know, the easy step is let's take our national fuel and we go from an E10 to an E15. And so then it's for the midterm, it's looking at fuel economy standards and what are some of the other standards and incentive programs out there that allow automakers to really realize the full benefits, which would be using a higher, an even higher blend of ethanol.
Of course, in your position, you're dealing with lots of different folks, whether they be in Congress or industry or individuals and farmers. What's the pushback right now that you hear most often? What is it that keeps us from making some of these changes and going forward? Is there any one thing, or is it a blend of things that are the biggest challenges right now for the industry?
You know, I think one challenge for us is always education. And every time you have a new Congress and we have newly elected members of Congress, we just have to educate them on some of the facts. What I am seeing in my conversations with administration, which includes many people who had been part of the Obama administration, is I've got to reintroduce them to the modern ethanol industry. When I say things like that 46% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, that's a new statistic that shows we as an industry continue to innovate, we continue to do more with less, and we continue to reduce our carbon footprint. So it's really educating them about the science and making policymakers understand that supporting biofuels is not just about supporting the rural economy. It is a way that you can address your climate goals at the same time. It's a great one, too. So it's, for me, I think that the conversation is really about education more than anything at this point.
You've mentioned the administration there a few times. Is there going to be a big change regarding ethanol as we moved from the Trump administration to the Biden administration, do you believe?
Well, you know, I am very encouraged by President Biden's commentary and commitments that he expressed while on the campaign trail specific to ethanol. He included biofuels. He doubled down on them in his rural plan. He was specific in his commentary about the importance of a strong renewable fuel standard. All right, that's the law that ensures that we blend more ethanol each year. He was very firm in his admonishment of the Trump EPA's use of small refinery exemptions to reduce the blending levels of biofuel. And I will say, you know, what very encouraging was the EPA's recent decision to kind of change their position on a critical court case that's about the use of small refinery exemptions. So this EPA is essentially saying, we disagree with what the previous EPA did and how they handled that. That's exactly where we want them to be. So that turn, and that just was recently announced in the past couple of days, that's a very encouraging sign that this EPA is going to uphold the renewable fuel standard, which will lead to more blending of ethanol.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Where do we stand right now in that court case? And for those that don't know, you may want to update them a little bit, because there were certainly challenges to the RFS and the small refinery exemption. Is that case then close to being resolved? You mentioned that the 10th Circuit Court there, I believe, had that ruling.
Yeah, so the issue, the Trump EPA granted 88 small refinery exemptions, and that cost our industry almost 4.5 billion gallons of demand. And so there have been several lawsuits related to the handing out of those small refinery exemptions. We are involved in many of them. One lawsuit in particular went through the 10th Circuit Court, and the courts ruled that EPA's abuse of the small refinery exemptions is in fact illegal. So it was a good court ruling, it was a unanimous decision. The Supreme Court, that was appealed by the oil industry, and the Supreme Court took that case up. So it's now before the Supreme Court. Briefings are going to be coming up in the next month, and then you're going to see oral arguments in the spring. We're not part of that litigation, but we're incredibly supportive of that litigation and certainly hope that the Supreme Court will uphold the 10th Circuit ruling, which we believe is very consistent with the law.
Emily, before we run out of time, I want to go over to the livestock side for just a minute. You know, we've talked about liquid fuel quite a bit, and of course that's important, gets a lot of the headlines, but we make a lot of byproducts off of ethanol. Whenever we saw that decrease in demand due to COVID and the pandemic and less travel and so forth, what did that mean for a lot of your members as far as some of the byproducts and things that went out? Because I know as a livestock producer, we use quite a bit that's going to come from an ethanol plant. How has the feed and some of these byproducts, how has that been affected by the demand that we've had both here domestically and internationally?
Well, it was absolutely affected. And so you saw very interesting conversations start to take place as people became much more attentive to the co-products produced. Not only the high protein animal feed DDGs, but also the carbon dioxide that we capture at ethanol plants that is used for refrigeration and meat packing and for beverages and so forth. So there were moments where I think our partners in the livestock industry were very worried, because if you're shutting down an ethanol plant, you're also not going to be producing that high protein animal feed. I mean, I think where we are at now is things seem to have settled down a little bit, but absolutely. I mean, a big part of the message was we've got to be able to get this industry through this and stabilize the industry, because we are such an integral part of many different supply chains in addition to ethanol fuel.
As we look to 2021, what's on your mind? We're already well into the year here, but as we look to the remainder of this year, what's on your mind and top of mind, I guess, should be for farmers right now?
I mean, top of mind is making sure in the larger climate conversation that we are part of the conversation, that all of agriculture is embraced as part of the solution. And I will say that we are having very good quality conversations and collaborations among the trade groups representing the various factions of agriculture. I am very excited about the growth of E15 domestically. Last year, in the worst fuel market in the past 30 years, we actually saw a 10% increase in retailers offering E15. And that speaks to the value of that product, why it's good for retailers and consumers like it. So I'm excited to see an explosion of E15 nationwide. If we see that, you're going to see this industry consume a lot more corn, and that's certainly a good thing for farmers. And globally, we want to make sure that this administration advocates for free and fair trade for us. We need access to markets. All we want is free and fair trade. And when we have the ability to have that open access to markets, we know that countries are going to be wanting our product because it's a quality product and we're able to produce it very affordably at the same time. So I'm excited for the opportunities ahead. I'm excited to continue to engage with the new administration. I will say it's very nice to have Secretary Vilsack confirmed as Secretary of Agriculture. He's a true champion of our industry, and he certainly understands the important relationship between ethanol and the farming community. So we couldn't have a better champion, all of us, than in Secretary Vilsack.
Yes, you would think that having somebody that's been there before and comes from Iowa should be fairly helpful to the industry. Would that be right?
Let's hope so. Absolutely.
Good, good. Other things that you want farmers to know before we wind up here today?
I just thank you for your continued support. As always, remain vigilant in keeping your elected officials informed, and make sure that they understand the importance of ethanol to having a strong rural economy, and the importance of policies that continue to drive at the state level and at the federal level more use of biofuels, things like maintaining a strong renewable fuel standard. So continue to be active citizens, and keep the pressure on the policymakers to do right by all of us.
Emily, I appreciate the time.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
I know we've seen here on our farm the impact COVID has had on ethanol production in 2020, in turn causing a tightening of availability of byproduct feeds like DDGs. As Emily mentioned, some plants have yet to come back online, and now with higher corn prices, those byproducts are certainly more expensive than a year ago. It will be interesting to see how supply and demand for corn and ethanol, both nationally and globally, impacts farmers this year. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. Farming the Countryside is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, weather or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.